On today's episode, we had a wonderful conversation with a family that is running a farm right here in northeastern Pennsylvania. I always love these episodes because we always get to really get down to in-depth stories and learn about where the business started and what's going on today. And we always have really good conversation around things that we should be aware of. I think you guys are going to enjoy this episode. Let's go ahead and get it started.
Welcome to Getting to Know the 570,
brought to you by Conversion Works Media,
a show that hosts special guests from in and around Northeast PA, sharing their stories, knowledge, and experiences in their work and personal lives.
Because let's face it,
doing business with locals feels good, but giving business to someone you know feels even better.
And now here's your host,
Frank Sefko.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Getting to Know the 570. Here we are today with some guests from Reinheimer Farms from Neskapec, or as we talked about, Hobby, which I didn't know, but I just learned today, so that was pretty cool. With us, we have Randy, Gary, Faith, and Anna Reinheimer, and we're going to learn all about this wonderful family and their business, and I'm really excited to learn all about it. Thanks for being here with us, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So who wants to go? Is it Gary? Is that who we picked as the front one here? We're going to ask
all. Sounds good.
All right, cool. So Reinheimer Farms, I briefly asked about what you guys did beforehand. And it was, we do meat, eggs, and we have a gluten-free kitchen, right?
That is correct, yes.
All right, so let's dive in and tell me all about the farm. And you guys said that you raise all of the animals, and all of the product comes from your farm.
Yes. So we raise beef cattle, hogs, and chickens, and we have chickens both for meat and egg production. And we started doing this in 2019. We opened our store, and we used to have a dairy farm. And we quit that in 2009 and kind of just were on a little bit of a journey as to what we wanted to do next, and kind of grew and landed in the area of raising animals different than normal commercial production. So we raise animals the way we believe they were meant to live. So we believe that hogs are meant to be in the woods with their nose in the dirt. We believe that chickens are meant to be out on the grass, eating bugs and different insects, eating grass.
Is that where the term like free range comes in? Is that what that means?
That would be yes. I mean, that we're probably a little bit even more evolved than free range, but and then we raise our cattle just on grass, 100% grass fed, because we believe that's what they're meant to eat. We believe all animals should be breathing fresh air and have the sun on their backs every day, and so that's kind of the why we do what we're doing and trying to do things differently, and yeah, that's kind of our niche, I guess, that we have.
So now, in addition to the farm, you also have front-facing retail store, right?
We do, yes.
And now is this like set up sort of almost like a small grocery store kind of thing, or?
We have a walk-in freezer that we store all of our meat in because our meat has to all be frozen because of the fact that it is ours, so we're killing, whole hogs and whole beef cattle at a time, and we process, a couple hundred chickens at a time. We raise our meat birds are just raised during the summertime because they need to be on pasture, so we really can't do them in the winter. But if you come into our store, we have a list on the wall that has everything that we have, and you can buy, a steak, some boneless, skinless chicken breast, sausage, bacon, whatever you want on our list. And we also do the gluten-free baking in our kitchen. And then we have some other local products that we sell as well. We only buy directly from other producers. We're not like a middleman, so we know the people that, you know.
You know where all the product
that
comes
made the
from,
cheese,
right?
Yeah. That everything. Yeah, we deal directly with the people that are making it.
I think that's so important today. I mean, we've had other guests that have come in here from other farms, and we've had such great conversation. And I think that, you know, one of the things that is important right now is that more so than ever, is that that our local communities really get behind the farms. It's so incredibly important for us to realize where our food is coming from, and you know, what's in that food. And do you find that your customers are people like who are really genuinely caring about that, or is it like are you getting just more because of where you're located and you're serving your local community? Like, what does your customer look like?
I think our customers are very invested in what we do. They want to know, they like to see the pigs. They like to see the chickens. They like to see the cattle. And I actually have one customer who is vegan except for our bacon. So I don't know how that works. But I mean, and she's okay with how everything is raised and how they're fed and how they're treated. And, you know, we want to give them the best life while they're here. And I would say that our customer base is very invested in that. They come because of that.
And so let's expand on that a little bit, because I think, talk to me about really like why is that your philosophy? Like why does that matter to you, and why should we care about that?
I mean, it matters to us because, I mean, we would call ourselves Christ followers, and we feel like God made animals a certain way, and we don't necessarily need to fit the animal into our expectations and our little molds. We need to honor what they were created to be. And so while they're here on Earth, we feel it's our duty to give them the best life that they can have. So, yeah, that's why it matters to us.
And so as it pertains to your customers, are they along the same belief system, or does it matter for them for other reasons?
I don't know that it matters belief system-wise, but it matters. I think that their food has been taken care of well. And they know exactly where it's coming from. They know that the bacon they get, I mean, some of them don't want to put it together, but the bacon they get are the pigs that they have seen.
Sure.
From, you know, little bacon seeds all the way up. And, you know, they know where everything's coming from.
I mean, I've heard of the idea that people care about the, you know, the open or free range or open range, the idea that those animals are in what would be referred to as more of like their natural elements. And then it also helps sort of encourage health and prevent, you know, disease and all of these things that you see in these close quarter, you know, cluster farms where it's just all about volume and all of that stuff. And it's, you know, I think this is some of the things that I'm learning, you know, about as I explore and have more conversations. I really never knew much about it. I'm ashamed, because I think just all too often you just go to the grocery store and you just do what you do. And, but then you realize, you know, the amount of steroids and, you know, garbage that is in the food that you buy. And, you know, when you start to realize that we can look at our local farms and you know, you have a farm that has a care model in place for the animals, you know, just all the way up until the point where they have to be slaughtered for food. It's this idea that, you know, they were healthy. They were given, you know, essentially free rein almost to move around and eat as they would, act as they would, just, you know, that's interesting and so valuable for us. And I'm always curious as to, you know, what other things am I not, what other things do I not know about? You know, what else do I need to know about in regards to that?
Yeah, and I think there's probably a couple of reasons why people buy from us. One is they can see how the animals were treated. And also the way we raise our animals, the meat is actually more nutritionally dense than commercially raised meat. Like there's studies and nutritional analysis that, you know, when animals are raised in a regenerative fashion, when they're out on the ground and eating what they were meant to eat, have the sunshine on them, their meat is more nutritious. And I think when it makes us healthier, you know, the animal that we're eating was raised in a healthy way. And I think it's, you know, we're healthier as well. The omega-3s are higher in grass-fed beef. There's just a lot of, we have numerous customers that once they have our meat, they don't want to go back to the grocery store to buy meat because it's just different.
Like you can literally taste the difference?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a taste difference. There's a texture difference. Yes.
Interesting. Even also in the pork?
Oh, yes. Sure.
Wow. And what would that difference be from in the pork product?
I mean,
is there a way to explain it? Is it easy to I don't know, you know. Is it cuz I, you know, is it like, for me, I think one time I did have a friend of mine bought a whole hog from a farm similar in description, and I remember I thought that we did pork chops, and I thought those were the juiciest sort of like, but they had like a what was I want to look for? I want to say that it had like a hue of like grass or something. Like there was like a taste of. I mean, they say animals taste like what they eat, I guess, but it was interesting because it
change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think do you ever go to McDonald's and you get like one of those like sausage sandwiches and you eat it and you're like, I'm not really sure what this is in this patty. I know it's in the shape of a sausage, but I don't really know what it is. You know what you're eating when you're eating our pork. Same thing with our kielbasa. Like, it's a different texture. It's a different taste. It's got, like, a different it doesn't have any – I feel like a lot of, like, industrial pork has a lot of added flavoring, seasonings, fake smoke. Where
tons
this is
of
like
salt.
Lots of salt, yeah. Where this is just – it's just good without having to add to it. And I think that's a big difference, especially our bacon, too. That seems like a big thing because it's not just like there's a lot more meat to our bacon, I feel like, than like other like industrial bacon.
So are you guys are not only slaughtering, but then you're smoking and doing all that? Or
we have a butcher that does our beef and our pork for us. So we take them to a butcher and they do the slaughtering and processing of the meat, yes. And then the chickens we do on site. A lot of it, there's different laws that you can do certain things and can't do certain things, so we have to follow all of that. So, all of our meat has to be slaughtered at a USDA-inspected butcher shop.
Okay. And then they do the smoking of the bacon and all that?
They do, yeah. Yes.
But they do it like the old-fashioned way. It's not like a liquid smoke or chemical smoke.
Oh yeah, and they're big smoker boxes, and oh man, I love bacon. Who doesn't love bacon? What kind of bacon do you guys have? Because can you make Canadian bacon? Can you make
Canadian? We have cottage, and we have regular bacon. Cottage bacon is very lean shoulder bacon.
Now, when we talk about like if somebody were to make the trip and come there, like how do your prices reflect? It's tough for you guys to, from like a small farm perspective, right? It's tough for you to price cheaper than grocery stores. Like you're going to be comparable or even maybe a little bit more. I mean, the resources just aren't there for you to compete with those kind of prices. That's the unfortunate part, right? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, no, we are more than a grocery store. Yes, absolutely. But, you know, we do things differently. You know, just the way we raise our animals and, you know, smaller numbers and, you know, they're all pastured. And so that requires more labor. There's just a lot of things involved. And it takes you longer to raise a grass-fed animal than it does if you grain feed. Like our beef is just grass-fed, so it takes longer to raise. Like all of those factor into, you know, ours needing to be a little bit higher in price. Like we try to keep it as affordable as we can, but we also have to pay the bills.
You gotta keep on farming. This is a part of a bigger conversation that we've been having with different people. You know, we work with a woman named Clancy who runs a program called Food Dignity Project. I don't know if you guys have heard of her, but she's local here and she's making a very aggressive run at trying to help local farms. And, you know, she's done things like a TED Talk. She runs, it's all about her coined phrases, the food dignity. And you know, right now, and we just, on another episode, we were talking about this with another farm that was here not too long ago. And it was, the subject matter is really around her emphasizing the idea that the farms are up against all of this, you know, big farms, right? What big farms are doing, the idea that they're the ones who can get the accounts with grocery stores, they're the ones who can sell at cheaper prices. But all of that is like garbage, right? It's like garbage product. And then and inherently, you know, we're just getting unhealthier rather than getting healthier. And it's sort of behind closed doors. And, you know, albeit that everybody out there is trying to really bring messaging to this and you know, do what they need to do to bring more awareness to it, it's unfortunate that mainstream media is not in our face about that and helping us to be more aware and understand the value, so that inherently if more of us would start bringing business to you, that would allow you to lower your cost, you know. But, you know, it's this sort of evil system. And then there's the bigger concern, which is how many farms do you see every year that close, you know? And that's sad, because that was how America was built, you know, where it was built off of this idea of farming and industry and us being able to trade and, you know, and here all of that land is just going up, and it's like, well, let's build homes there now, you know, another development. And it's sad, because at the end of the day, again, we're just getting unhealthier. And so if there's this good quality product that it's in our communities, what is it for us to take a ride to a local farm and pick up the product that we know where it comes from, that the food was, we knew what the animals were eating or the vegetables, how they were grown. And, you know, it's just like, if we were to do that, we can get healthier, but it's not convenient, you know? And that's the biggest issue. It's not convenient for us. We're in this fast world, and, you know, do I want to drive to Nescopec to go to a farm to pick up? I would love to. And yet somehow, some way, it's just like, oh, but the grocery store's right there, you know? And we want to be able to create more awareness around this. And I guess that leads me to my next question to you is like, in what ways, like, how are you, other than for your immediate community, in what ways, and you're here talking today, so that kind of answers a part of my question, but, you know, what are you guys up against? How are you promoting and being able to get people to come and see you? And, you know, where are you thriving, and where are you challenged in running a farm?
I mean, we mainly promote on social media. It's a free platform. We're working now with another company to try to develop an online, like a different online presence, and they're geared specifically for farms. it's going to be pretty neat, really. And it will allow us to do that whole online order system where people can, you know, place their order online and just pick it up, or, you know, things just kind of growing that way a little bit. But, I mean, we're up against a lot of things. I mean, our costs have skyrocketed over the last few years, and we have tried not to raise our prices because we understand that everyone is stretched. But something that I kind of think about for myself is if I go to the grocery store, I wander and I pick up five other things that I didn't need. But if you go to the farm market, if you go to, you know, if you come to us, if you come to whatever, and you're going specifically for your meats, for your cheeses, for your vegetables, you're not picking up whatever, soda because it's on sale.
Garbage.
Right. Yeah. But so you end up, you're still spending the money, but what are you spending it on? Are you going to spend it on good stuff, or are you going to spend it on junk because Oreos are 3 for $5?
So it's a great point. No, it's a great point.
I know Oreos 3 for $5, huh?
Whoa, wait. We have to put a pause to this while we all run out real quick. Yeah. That was funny. Anna, right? Yeah, yeah. Anna heard 3 for $5. I got to go.
You can tell who's a hungry college student.
That's funny. Yes, that's a great point. And it almost, you know, it almost seems like if you were somebody who is really trying to fight the urge, well, then just intentionally go there and buy your product because the other stuff's not there. So at least you're just getting your essentials and being able to go home and, you know, just step on the gas a little bit when you're passing by McDonald's.
Right. But I was just saying one thing, too, that's kind of been cool for us to witness. Like we get a lot of people that probably travel about a half an hour to our place. I would say most customers are probably about a half an hour. But they come regularly. And I think part of it is because of the kind of community aspect, I guess I will call it. I can tell you how many customers that are now our friends, and we're their friends. Mm-hmm. And they're invested in what we're doing and, you know, what we're all about at the farm, and they like to make the trip out. It's almost an event. They come out, they see the pigs, they know our dogs, you know, they ask what the girls are doing. You know, it's been a really neat experience for us. And I think it's really part of, like, I think what we miss when we go to the big boxes all the time, is that interaction with the person that raised your vegetables, you know, raised the meat that you're buying, and just that connection with your food, that I think
a first name,
yeah,
right. I mean, it's the idea that you know who you're buying from. I think that's extraordinarily important, and that's just it. You get, like, you, to your point, you go to the big box. Like, the only thing that I would say to you is that. And it's a sort of a standout thing when it happens. Like, but if you go to the grocery store, for instance, you know, the guy that's working the meat stand, he's always that guy. And he's like, you know, somehow you build a relationship with him. And that's the best way I think I could probably explain of, because I have gone to local farms, you know, especially since we've been expanding the conversation and I see the value. So, like, It's a different experience, and I you do feel it feels good too. Like, I feel that when I'm buying the product, albeit that, yeah, sometimes the pricing might be a little bit more. One, I know I'm buying something healthy, but I also feel like I'm supporting a family in a community. Like, I'm helping support your business to continue to grow and serve our community the way that it is. And I think more people, I'm happy that we can do this and have this kind of conversation. I just wish more people would get behind it and create awareness and drive, like, a demand for it, and rather than make it sound like it's an inconvenience. I just think it's so incredibly important. And, you know, if we think about, you know, our children and generations, and, you know, we need to get healthier. and food just keeps getting mass manufactured and we just keep getting garbage. So how do we change that, you know?
On the convenience topic, I think a lot of people like to they'll get like half cows or whole pigs or something like that. And we don't do that, but we do bundles. So it allows people to get like beef, pork, and chicken. Because like, I mean, how much ground beef do you want out of one whole cow? Like that takes a lot of ground beef or like a certain steak, you know what I mean? But you can pick what you want. And then there's a price break at 500. Mm-hmm. So what, 10%? Off or 5% off at $500. So I think that sometimes if you're like trying to make an excuse or you're like, oh, well, you know, I need this much at this point, like you can, there's ways around it, or like you can make one big trip. Like we have a customer who comes like every 4 or 5 months and she gets all she needs for that amount of time. Like it's, I think maybe some people don't know if we have that product maybe to do that, but we do. And so like that can kind of help with the convenience type thing because like it's there, like, and it's a better than getting, you know, making multiple trips, like a trip to the grocery store every week, or just getting only beef for, you know, half a year. You kind of have, you have more options than that here. So
what does that look like in regards to a bundle, like you said? So like,
so you pick $500 worth of meat, which it can be whatever you want, beef, pork, chicken, you pick what you
different
want.
Different cuts.
Different cuts. Whatever. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Like if you want
kibasi,
$50
chops,
of
burgers,
mm-hmm, bacon, chicken breast, like whatever, as long as we have it in stock when you're getting it, you can have it in your bundle. And so I think that makes it kind of unique too, because you have, you know, so many options and one stop. So
do you only, so for instance, every once in a while, I like to make, like I'll do like a short rib, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I don't want them like the grocery store has them, like where they're typically like cut short. Like I want the full, I want that, like, what would they reference it as, like a T-bone rib or whatever? Like I want the big rib.
Yeah.
Right? Like, is that something mm-hmm. that I can call you and say, hey, I'd like to order
our
some
of these?
Our butcher
is really cooperative. So like it may not be there like the week that you're, like it may not be the next day, but like if you say, hey, like this is something I'm looking for, then we'll, the next time we send an animal, we'll just contact our butcher and be like, hey, can we get this cut specifically? And then when we pick up, we'll have it for you.
Now, so how often are, like, what is the size of your cattle? Like, essentially, like, how often is our animals going out and come, you know, I don't know how to.
Just logistically, because it is a little ways from, you know, we have to drive an hour to the butcher. So we, once a month. So the,
oh, okay. Once a month, there's
once
a cycle.
So everything, the longest, you know, you could be out of, I mean, we're generally not out of anything more than possibly a couple of weeks. You know, we could possibly be out of something, but, or if you called and wanted a special cut, within a month, I would have it.
Okay.
Yes. So yeah, we have some different people that, you know, ask for something special. And we do some different things. We just started doing ham loaf mix, which was something we never knew existed, apparently it's a thing.
It's a thing.
And
it's a big thing.
Well, tell us about it. I don't know what ham loaf is.
We don't know. We've never had ham loaf.
It's like spam?
No.
Like, you know, like, is it look like it is what I'm saying?
No, it looks kind of like sausage-ish.
Oh.
I didn't know that ham loaf existed. But
like the concept of like a meatloaf?
Yes. So it's ground pork and ground ham together. They're ground together. And then you make
put
it
into a loaf.
Into a loaf or a meatball and bake it on top of pineapple. Or okay. You put it, or like a balsamic, like a sweet balsamic glaze over it. So I've heard it's very good. I have not had it in stock long enough to try it. But it's a thing.
I mean, this sounds like a...
Yeah, it was just, I guess, like a lot of people do it around Easter, holiday thing.
Yeah.
But we've started stocking it all the time because, it's a thing.
That's interesting. And each time you stock it, it sells out?
Yes.
So do you have to get like on a wait list now to get this, this ham loaf?
Kind of.
Wow. Okay. I mean, what does that mean for you guys? Does that mean like you start to make more and more of it? I mean, if it's running just, that hot. Like,
yeah, we just ask them. You know, again, that's made at our processors. And so they knew that ham loaf existed. Because I called and I was like, does ham loaf exist? And they're like, yes.
So is this so it is, it appears like ground meat when you order it, and then it's up to you to make the meatballs or the loaf or whatever you're going to do.
Because there's like so many variations of ham loaf.
Mm.
It's like all you can go so many directions apparently.
Well, and the idea I guess is that it's just those two items mixed.
Yes.
Mm. I mean, it sounds like it would taste really good.
I'm thinking it probably does.
I mean,
we will try it.
I feel like that's something I would make into a patty and then put an egg over it.
Well, one of our very good friends has a cafe, and he just bought some ham loaf, and he's going to create something magical with it, and I can't wait.
What is it? We always talk about food at like dinner time here.
We got to get ham loaf to Chef Matt over at Kevin's.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, he needs to do something gourmet with it. That would be excellent. Oh, my God. Well, ham loaf.
Yeah, Sugar and Loaf Bakery. He just opened a cafe, and he just got ham loaf last week, and he said, I'm going to do something with this, and it will be out of this world, I promise.
And where is that?
It's in Cunningham.
Okay.
Sugar Loaf. It's right right.
Just like he has everything, coffee, the whole bit.
Oh, yeah. Very
sandwiches.
Good.
Yep. Nice. Okay.
And he uses our meats.
Okay. Awesome. Now, do you do a lot of like? Is there a lot of businesses that like restaurants or anything like? What does that look like for you guys?
Just Sugar and Loaf right now.
Okay, and why is that? Is it because of what everybody's always up against? You know, they would prefer to buy through the food vendors for consistency.
Yeah. It can be hard for us to always have what somebody. You know, there's only so many cuts you get out of an animal, you know. So if somebody wants, you know, T-bones all the time, well, there's only so many T-bones, you know. And then so it makes it more complicated for us to keep up with our regular customers if we would do a lot of wholesale. And, you know, even like research that I've done, to be honest, most people don't recommend people like us doing wholesale. It's just, you know, restaurants change their menus, and then you're always, you know, you're counting on a certain amount of, you know, whatever for a restaurant, and then they decide to do something different, and then so it can get complicated, you know, adjusting our inventory, and then it changes, you know. So
I think it depends on the kind of restaurant, mm-hmm. you know, because there are restaurants that will focus on always having steak, you know? So like for them, that's a great pair up, right? But you're right. So the other restaurants who are like, well, this week we'll have steak, but next week we're going to be focused on chicken or whatever. And then you're sort of banking on trying to produce to that level, and then they back off. And now you're left with overage. And yeah, I mean, that is the challenge. But I think that there's still enough. I think that there's still enough business to be had where you can serve restaurants and then they can get involved with saying that they're using the local product. You know, because especially in this area, I think that you know, there one restaurant may use it, but another restaurant, you know, it's if they were just to commit to set orders or whatever with you or find out what you had and then run a special based on the accessibility.
Right.
That's not unrealistic. You know, I mean, the restaurant business is, and this is where I think that they could be doing better. I think that they could be doing better because it's not always about efficiency. Their customers do care about this stuff. And if they were to share this information, more people would appreciate, would even just have that extra level of appreciation. You know, I know, for instance, we had a cattle farm come in here a while back. We had an episode with Greenwood Valley Wagyu, mm-hmm. right? And afterward, I know that she was able to pick up a bunch of clients for our customers in the restaurant business. I thought that was really special. And, you know, she will, based on her availability, share that information with the restaurants, and then they'll run specials on against that. That's why I know it's doable. It's just right. about getting those relationships and right. then, you know, kind of help, because they know that's where I think that they could be doing better in their outreach and being able to connect with farms like you. Because to me, there's no excuse. There's no reason why you should always have to buy from the big, you know, tractor trailers that are dropping food off. That's not necessary, right? Not when it's right. in your backyard. You have right. the every ability to call onto a farm like you and say, hey, what does your availability look like? You know, now some of them might want to shoot me for saying that, but but seriously, like if you have a relationship and that's all you got to do is just build a relationship. And then maybe for you guys, you're saying, hey, here's what we have for coming into next week. Right. Mm-hmm. And then whoever speaks up and takes that from you, and then that's a wrap. And if anybody calls you and says, hey, do you guys still have that? And then you go, nope, we're out. All right. Thank you. Right. And then like, that's just it. Just like plan your week, plan your do whatever. And like, I feel like there's a system that's there to be had where restaurants can be using your product, and that can help, you know, it can help you, but it can also help their business. I would love to see, you know, when I've seen featured for Greenwood Valley, it's right on the menu, right? From right here, right? In Bloomsburg, PA, Greenwood Valley Wagyu. And it's like, that's outstanding. Like, that feels good, you know? And that's mm-hmm. where I think it would be really nice to see on there, Reinheimer Farms beef. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, that's excellent. I just, I don't know why those systems can't get right. They're just moving too fast always. And But, it sounds like you've got a decent customer base that consistently comes back. Now, do you guys – is there, like – do you have ebbs and flows with, like, seasonal purchasing and stuff? Or how does that work in your business? Because it almost seems like you have product that people need all the time.
Yeah, we're definitely slower in the summer, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, you think more grilling and all that?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like summertime is a little lower July, August, but I think every small business drags July and August.
Vacation, right?
Yeah. So like going like May, June is good, and then July, August, and then once back to school starts, then it picks back up again. So there are some, some leaner months there. But definitely holidays make a big difference because we do so many, especially baked goods in the holidays, because there's not a lot of places you can get gluten-free pumpkin roll, apple pies, pumpkin pies, all of those things.
Is it 100% gluten-free?
Yeah, we're a dedicated gluten-free facility. Faith and I both have celiac, so.
Oh, that's the worst, huh?
It's not, honestly. It's really okay.
All right.
If I'm going to have a disease, I'll take celiac.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, I guess so, because it forces you to be healthy, right? I
mean, it's so manageable
these days, right?
It is. When I was first diagnosed, it was not so manageable. I just, ate eggs and spinach forever till I never wanted to see eggs and spinach again.
Mm.
But, now, things have changed dramatically.
Faith, you going to jump in?
Celiac isn't that bad. I mean, especially because of, I think, like, basically what Mom said, and I got diagnosed when I was in second grade, right?
Second grade, yeah.
So, I mean, I think that you just have to tell yourself no when there's, like, other stuff. But I think that it's really important that we are doing gluten-free baked goods so that, like, people can enjoy, like, a cupcake or, like, a cinnamon roll, and they don't have to just be like, oh, I wish I could eat that, but I can't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's definitely something that I think that we do really good. And we go by this Mom's thing is, if it tastes gluten-free, we don't want to sell it, you know? Like, that stuff
is that's
like,
good. Yeah.
It tastes like a rock, you know? You wouldn't want that.
Like you're chewing the bottom of a cardboard box.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I remember years ago when my wife's stepfather – there was one bakery in the area here, and they were a guest on here, a Manuka Bakery. That was the place that you would go to get your your gluten-free stuff, and people would drive from an hour away to kind of try to come get stuff there. And, you know, then it became the awareness piece went into play, right? And everybody started to learn more and more about this. And I remember in the very beginning, it was just like when he had to switch, he learned that he had this problem, and he was a beer drinker and everything. He's like, I can't have beer. Right. And I remember when he had to get the product, and the product wasn't like really developed out yet. So some of it was like, I remember sitting there and he's like, here, do you want to try it? And I think I gave it the same face that I did if somebody asked me to try dog food. Right. I was like, I'm like, I don't know. Like, right. And I remember trying it, and I was like, oh, buddy, you got to eat like this. Like, this is what you, I'm like, oh no. I'm like, I feel so bad for you. And it's just funny to think back to then, because it, you know, it was like, it was really quality places, but they couldn't figure out how to quite fix it yet. And then just think about where we're at today, where if you blind taste tested me, I wouldn't be able to tell you the difference necessarily. Some products you can tell, but other products I'd be like, I would never know. Like some of the pastas these days that they have, the gluten-free pastas, unbelievable.
Oh yeah.
And incredibly, like, and you think about like how much healthier that is for you too, to have the gluten-free too, because it's like that it's not all like super carb. Right, like carb loaded. Am I correct by saying that? Like with the gluten free, it's not as bad of a carb, or maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I don't want to give advice.
It's actually, I believe, higher in the starch content. So,
all right, don't listen to me, folks. I mean, I'm not a Men's Fitness cover model, so don't listen to me anyway. But.
But yeah, I actually think the carb levels are higher, just because it's all corn, a lot of corn and rice, and you know, gluten in itself is not bad for you. I believe it's what we've done with monoculture crops that has made gluten bad for you know people unable to process gluten. But gluten itself is not the enemy.
Okay. Where is it? So what? And I'm always curious too. Like, what? You know, I don't think I've ever really even had the conversation with him. I just remember hearing that when you have celiac disease, it is something that just causes like cramps and like you kind of hurls you over. Like, what is that experience like when you do end up having gluten? And
yeah, celiac. I mean, it's a crazy disease because everyone manifests differently. Their symptoms are so different. But what it does is destroys the lining of your intestines. So it, all the villi, the little fingers in your intestines that would absorb nutrients, it kills them. So your intestines become like tiles. So you're unable to absorb your nutrients. So you're eating, but you're starving. So that makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah.
So everyone's symptoms manifest. I didn't know that I was sick. I just knew that when they did some blood work and they're like, hey, your iron's at 6, it probably shouldn't be. And I was like, oh, okay. But, you know, things like that, you know, I didn't know I was sick.
Yeah. It's interesting because I would have thought the opposite. After he realized and then he started eating gluten-free, turned into a rail. He lost all of his weight. And just the way he eats now is very steak, potato, very, you know, lean diet, essentially. He doesn't – every once in a while I think they'll have the – if they have gluten-free pasta or something, he'll eat that. But it's – his complete diet changed, and then now he's, like, super lean, super thin. And I'm just surprised.
He probably removed a lot of beer.
Well, I don't know that he was a heavy beer drinker. Yeah, I mean, definitely that plays a role for sure. But
because that's a lot of sugar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's interesting though, because I have other friends who also eat gluten free, and when they changed their diet, they lost just a ton of weight. That's why I was under the impression that it was like the bad carbs or something like that, but.
It's It depends. You know, everybody's different. After I got better, I gained weight because I was absorbing nutrients.
You're like, again. I could eat again.
So, yeah, I mean, everyone's different, and that's why it's such a crazy and undiagnosed disease.
Yeah, I think a lot of, you know, what we're talking about today in regards to like the farming and all that, if you really start to root back, would you think that do you think that the nutrition at all like has anything to do with to contribute to that, or is that just something that we didn't know about for years? Like, was it, because we didn't, like, celiac disease wasn't really talked about, but then was it, at some point it just became abundantly clear.
Well, I think personally I had it when I was a child, but it wasn't known. You have, you know, a sensitive stomach. Mm. You know, I had been to doctors and they didn't really know why, but celiac wasn't known. So it wasn't until, you know, later on in life when I had other complications that they found it. But so I think I've probably had it, you know, since I was probably, I was in second grade. So I've probably had it since then, but I just didn't know.
Well, I love that you created a product, though, that is based off of what you know you went through. So
right. When someone takes your cupcakes, like, and like, you know, no more birthday cake, really? No, I'm not going to let that happen.
Yeah. And you know, was these, now do you do all the baking yourself?
Yeah. You know, Anna helps, Faith helps, and my sister-in-law, Shelley, helps.
Okay. And are these your recipes, or did you learn about them? Like, or are they developed?
They're something. They're whatever happens, you know, today. I like walk out and think, what am I going to make today? And that's what I do.
That's cool.
Yeah, she comes up with most. She has a lot of different things. And Randy's a very good baker. Like, and so she's figured it out.
Lots
better than most, I think. And so we have a lot of people that come in. That's another kind of cool community that we have, is that gluten-free community that can come in and they know they're going to get a treat. And we started doing even like cinnamon rolls. We were at it was at Lancaster Central Market. Rand and I were on a little vacation day, and we picked up gluten-free sticky buns there that looked like they were going to be good. And we were like, oh, Faith will love these. And we get home, and you had to like saw it with a serrated knife, you know? So I was like, okay, we need to do better. And so we sought out to do that. And so now we have Cinnamon Roll Saturday, first Saturday of the month, and it's been really
awesome.
Good. Yeah. So, I mean, they're fun things that, you know, we kind of get to do for people, you know, because cinnamon rolls are tough for one in the gluten-free realm. And
yeah, for the record, I never would have done it until he was like, no, we can't do it. And I was like, no, you're an idiot.
I saw a challenge that we needed to take on.
That's awesome. I love it. What seems to be the highest gluten-free product that you have in demand? What are people always asking for?
Churro cupcakes. That is the number one seller.
That's the, am I remembering it correctly? That's like cinnamon and sugar.
Yes.
And kind of like a, well, I would know a churro as being like that sort of fried dough with the cinnamon and sugar.
Yeah, I've actually never had a churro, but I make the cupcakes.
Okay.
Okay. That's something like anybody, like whether you're gluten-free or not, like we have a very large non-gluten-free clientele that gets all of our gluten-free stuff just because it's just so good. And so like that's a big thing, our churro cupcakes. Like people will buy them for events or open houses, baby showers.
Weddings.
Yeah, we've done wedding cakes for people who aren't even gluten-free, but they just want them because they're that good. So I mean, I feel like that says something. If you have an option and you're choosing the gluten-free one just because it tastes good, I mean,
well, it's the better option, right? I mean, in some ways, I guess you said in other ways, it's like higher in sugar content or whatever, right?
Probably, yeah, and carbs.
Just enjoy your cupcakes.
Yes, yeah, stop thinking about it.
Shut up and eat your cupcakes. That's just funny.
Yeah, do a couple extra, whatever, burpees or squats or something.
Yeah, I guess if you're eating cupcakes, they're cupcakes either way you look at it.
That's right.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Do you also do like, are they just sweets or do you do like, you know, like I've seen like zucchini breads and stuff like that. Do you?
I've done zucchini bread. I don't usually do a lot of breads. Oh, I do soups. Yeah. Yeah. We do a paleo chicken soup. That's a big one.
Mm. Okay. Love soups. I'm like a soup fanatic. Yeah.
Yeah, the paleo chicken soup is really good. It's a tomato base, and it's just, you know, our chicken and our bone broth and tomato, coconut milk, basil.
That sounds delicious. Now, what you so you don't have these all the time, right? Like these are rotating in and out, or
the baked goods. I mean, they change weekly because I mean, except for like chocolate chip cookies, that's like a given. But I mean, I try to rotate just because we do get a lot of the same people throughout the weeks and the months, so I want to give them variety. I change things out quite often.
That's cool. Is that where they would see it on, like, would they go on social media?
And yeah, Facebook, Instagram, and then, you know, we're working on that other platform.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'd like to know a little bit more about the history of things, too, because yeah, I think oftentimes, like, we just drive down the road and look over to the left, we see a farm or something, but we don't know the story behind it. And I'm always, you know, a big fan of kind of knowing when I drive by. You know, I'd love to be the one in the car to be like, oh, yeah, you see this place to the right here or the left? This is blah, 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 blah. I'm always curious. So could you tell us a little bit, like, how long have you had the property, the farm? Like, how did this all come about?
So I grew up on the farm that we live on. My father, we had a dairy farm. So yeah, when I was born, we had a dairy farm. And then I went to college for ag business and ended up coming back to the farm. And then we expanded the dairy farm. We built a new barn and expanded. And we did that up until 2009. And we just were burnt out from it. The schedule, the kind of everything, I guess. You know, but looking back, I don't know. There was just a lot of things that it can wear you down. And, yeah, it just wasn't our thing anymore. So we sold the cows in 2009. And then we spent some time just, I don't know, I'm going to say wandering a little bit, trying to figure out what it was that we really wanted to be doing. And I had a friend that was all about, like, you ought to be pasturing, because we didn't pasture animals. You know, it was basically a normal commercial dairy, which a lot of them, you know, the cows are just in the barn all the time, and that's what ours were. So we started, ended up, had some beef animals and pastured, and we just got down my friend Mike, he introduced us to Joel South and Polyface Farms in Virginia. Joel does what we do, but on a much larger scale. He's like known throughout the world. I read a book. Mike had me read a book. It was called The
Pigness of Pigs.
The Marvelous Pigness of Pigs. So it was basically about, you know, pigs being pigs, like living like pigs are meant to live. It kind of changed.
A book about that, huh?
It's actually really cool.
Yeah, it's a great book.
I mean, I'm intrigued. When you're trying to wrap your head around that.
It's more than just about pigs. I would say that book changed me, really. Gave me a whole different perspective on, you know, how we should be doing things.
What would be like the biggest takeaway from it?
Well, I think, you know, we can go through our day to day, and I think this happens in a lot. I think in agriculture a lot, but I think in anybody's life, you know, you go through and it's like, well, this is what we do, you know, and like this is how you raise animals, or this is, you know, you have to have more animals to make money, and you have to. The only way you can do that is if you put them in a barn and you know, not let them outside, and because how could you have that many? You know, it's just all those things you're kind of told, and you have to feed them this way. So that you can get them finished in, you know, 7 months instead of a a year. And, you know, so it's like, well, this is what you have to do because that's what everybody does. And this is how you have to do it. And you're kind of on that treadmill and you just keep going, you know, and you never really, really question why you're doing it or if it's the right way. And I think, yeah, through reading that book and just gave me that, okay, we need to like think about why, you know, is this how we want to be doing this? Is this the way we should be doing this? And the unfortunate part is I think in a lot of agriculture, because of like financially, you're on that treadmill and you can't get off, you know, you're kind of stuck. But we ended up, and it hasn't been easy, you know, we do other things to make money too, because it's not that easy. But we wanted to do it different, and we wanted to give people the ability to come to our place and buy meat that was raised differently, and that we can respect the animal and be happy with how we how the animal lived while we had it, we got fired up about it, and this is what we want to do. And yeah, we started down the road, and we're trying to keep it going here.
What was the time frame from prior to you switch? So you went from dairy to then switching over to what would that be referring to, like cattle raising at the point, or?
Yeah, we never didn't have cattle, but we went to I guess just a different raising animals in a regenerative. Meats, right? Yeah, we do what we call regenerative farming, sustainable farming. So it's just having a different perspective on how you're raising the animal. We started off with some beef, and then we did chickens. We started selling at farmers markets a little bit, and then we decided to build a shop in the barn. We converted some of the barn into a retail space, and we converted that, and we opened the store in February, and in March is when COVID kind of went crazy, and so it was a kind of a blessing and a curse for us, because we could stay open and we were insanely busy. But they weren't all our customers. Some of them were our customers and some of them weren't. Some were, everybody wanted to fill their freezer because they thought the world was going to end.
Sure.
And we did get, we got a lot of customers from that. It worked out, but it also we went through everything that we had because, people were just loading up.
Oh yeah.
But it was an experience.
It was an experience.
that's to say the least. Yeah. It was an experience for everybody. That's
yes,
for sure.
Yes.
There's just so much panic.
Well, and it was, everything was unpredictable. I mean, it was what's coming, what's next, everybody, their pockets were braced, but then yet at the same time, it was like resources, toilet paper. Toilet paper when unavailable, unbelievable. That went before the water did, which was a little.
And I think it did give people, it made people think more when the shelves were empty in the stores about where things were coming from.
Yeah.
And like I definitely think it made at least some people want to buy local more and understand the importance of. Yeah, we need to, it's important to have food that I can get that's only a few miles from where I live, that's raised there, that we don't have to depend on it being shipped in or imported or whatever,
So in some kind of weird way, was there a slight sort of benefit from, I don't want to say you benefited from the pandemic, but like benefited from their sort of the culture shock that we received at that time?
I think in general, it made people think more about where their food comes from.
Yeah. And are you still seeing, is there still sort of a residual of customers that you never had but then picked up then that are now still shopping with you?
Well, yeah, and I think still that mindset, you know, still that people are concerned about where they're sourcing their food and that they're, you know, that they have a source, you know.
It was really interesting because there was some discussions about different things, but during the different topics, meaning like, you know, farming and then also, you know, other things about self-wellness and all of this stuff. During the time of the pandemic, where everybody was like hunkered down, YouTube blew up, and the amount of content that people dove into and went, you know, deep into the holes of education, if you will, a lot of awareness came out of that at that time. So it's interesting because, you know, there are still things now that before these were still problems and things that existed, but they weren't really being talked about. And then after the pandemic, when people really dove down into things and started learning more, the sort of, I guess we'll call it, byproduct of that would be that today more and more people are aware of certain things because of what happened during that time while they were able to educate, I guess, if you will. And people were stepping up and, you know, talking about things and their concerns about where they were resourcing food. They didn't just be concerned about it. They went and made videos about it and they told other people about it. And so I think there was some inherent culture shock awareness that took place. That's a good thing for the way that we look at things today, you know, and in other ways, maybe not so much, but I think that was at least a silver lining, if you will, in what we all went through. So that's nice to hear that there was at least some upside, some positivity that came from what was the scariest time in a long time for all of us, because it didn't matter what business you were in at that point. It was like, ugh, what am I going to do? You know, like we didn't know what tomorrow was going to bring. So that was pretty crazy. What a time to open up a retail store.
Yeah, right. It was challenging.
And I think it made people more skeptical, which in some ways people, you know, carry that to extremes that, you know, are not healthy. But I think it also just gave a questioning attitude about, oh, how is my food raised? You know, just about, I think, a lot of things. We just learned through that process that, you know, you need to ask the questions and not just go with
it. Yeah. Now, you said your parents had the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a generation before that, or did they buy it first?
My parents bought the farm that we're on, yes. My grandfather was a farmer as well.
Okay.
But on a different farm, yeah.
And when did your parents buy it? Like what year?
That's a good question.
19 long time ago. Right? 19 long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. About close to whatever, six.
They've been married, what, 65
years? 65 years. So about 65 years ago, yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. Wow. And were your, like, so you said your grandfather was a farmer, so that means mm-hmm. your dad worked with him?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then that's when he decided, this is what I'm going to do. So is how many generations of farmers in your family?
I think we have that. It's at least four.
So you, your so dad, your grandfather, and then your grandfather, yes. Your great-grandfather? And then that was it?
I'm not sure that, I'd have to dig back into the history books, I guess.
No, but that's, I mean, it's cool to know. I mean, it's just, I love generational things like that, that it's a neat story. You know, your grandfather, was he in the dairy business too?
They have a dairy farm, yes.
Okay. Oh, still?
My grandfather, passed away actually the same year I was born.
Wow.
He died fairly young, but, my dad was 30 when my grandfather died, but, you know, healthcare was a little different then, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm curious now. So in the storyline of that, was there a reason your dad didn't take over your grandfather's farm, or?
My dad was already on his farm.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And then where is that farm today? Like whatever happened
to
that?
So my cousin is on that farm.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still in the family.
Yes.
That's neat. And or are they still dairy?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. That's an old one there, right?
Right. Yes. Like
that's even older than 65 years.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Wow. How far back do you know? Have any idea how far back that goes?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure on that one. When my grandparents bought that property, I'm not sure.
So, am I to assume you guys get your milk from there? Is that, or is that not local?
We get our milk at the grocery store, to be honest. Like, that's how we do it. Yeah. Because, I mean, they don't really sell.
They don't sell.
It's actually.
Oh, they're strictly to like wholesale
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then if you get into the whole raw milk thing, then that's a whole other, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a whole other ball game. Yeah. Got you. Okay. So, four generations of farmers. And then what? Are these young ladies getting into the farm business? I mean, is this the next generation?
Do you want to start, Faith?
Oh, no.
Okay, I can start. So I'm currently going to college now for music therapy. But I definitely I can't not be part of the farm. Like, it's just part of me. And, I don't know if Faith can say the same, but I know for me, like, it's a passion I have. And my dad and I go full nerd conversations about, like, regenerative farming. And I just, like, all right, this is, like, not helping my nerd case out. But, like, I was, like, in the school newspaper and I would write about regenerative farming. And, like, I think that's so important. And I think that there's so many things that farmers – I would like to help educate other farmers because I think that this is really a sustainable way to continue our agriculture. And so back to me, I guess. So yes, I'm going to school for music therapy, but I also love working with horses. And so equine therapy is another really cool outlet. And so like, I don't know what I'm doing yet. I'm 18, but I know that eventually I'd like to take the farm and use it for either like have my own clinic and do the farm work, like include music therapy and equine therapy together, which is something I think would be really incredible. But I definitely am not like letting the farm go in any way, even if it looks like slightly different than what we're doing. I want to keep the regenerative style. But my parents have really shown me, like we would sit down at our kitchen table and be like, imagine one day we built this little shack at the end of our driveway and we sold this and that. And they've really showed me that whatever I dream I can do because they've officially done that. Like, I feel like not a lot of people can say that. Like, my parents did what they set their mind to. Like, we had an idea years ago and maybe it was, yeah, like 6 years ago, 7 years ago, but we did it. Like, even though it took a while, we did it, and they did it. And so, like, I know whatever we want to do, we can do because they did it first. So,
mm-hmm. I definitely want to do what Anna is doing, you know, keep the farm regenerative and, I don't know if that's the right word. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm only in eighth grade, so I still have a lot of time to figure out what I want to do. But I definitely want to make sure the farm stays how it is. And maybe, like, me and Anna ride horses a lot, and we have our own horses, and we work with horses a lot. And so
that's where the equestrian
mm-hmm.
thing comes into play.
Yeah. So I think that it'd be really cool to incorporate that into like everyday farming, so like moving cows and stuff like that with horses.
Faith wants to be a cowgirl. No, it's true. Like, we'd like to be able to expand the farm to add like more. I'd like to add more cattle eventually, put more pasture on our land, which is an idea we've been talking about now, and like be able to kind of let our farm grow naturally.
Yes. And definitely add a lot more of like vegetables and stuff to grow more with that.
Cause I definitely do the vegetables. I don't like vegetables.
Do you guys have, do you grow vegetables and stuff? Is that a part of the farm?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a little part of my crazy. I have an acre that we are transitioning into organic. Well, technically, once all my paperwork's done, it would be certified organic. But we've done some organic vegetables on it this year. And so, yeah, we time can be a little rough having time for all the things that we've got going on. So and organic vegetables take a lot of time, a lot of labor intensive. So
how big is the farm? I didn't even ask that. What's the acres?
We have about 150 acres.
Okay. That's a pretty big plot of land. How much of that is actual farm?
Well, we farm our farm and we rent some. So we farm about that 150 acres total. It's not all on our home farm. So I have about a little over 100 acres on our home farm. And then I farm another 50 acres besides.
Okay. Is that when you say that, what is that? I mean, I'm just a little in the woods about that one, but is that where you cross over into somebody else's property and then essentially
we rent pay ground. To use that? Yes. Yes.
So just acts as like an extension.
Neighbor, yeah.
So that way your cattle can migrate. Is that?
Well, the farm that we rent is just for hay ground. So I make hay up for to feed during the winter time.
Okay.
So we feed hay when they can't be out grazing.
Okay. That makes sense.
So yeah.
Yeah. My level of farming knowledge comes from the TV show Yellowstone. So I've learned about bloat. I've learned about how you have to move the cattle from section to section. A lot of interesting things. Do you guys? Well, you all laugh. So I'm imagining. Do you guys watch that show?
No, actually, we haven't. But
we watched the show on. It's on Prime, I guess. It's the Ultimate Cowboy Showdown, and all my roommates make fun of me for watching it. But it's I don't know. They move cattle and treat cattle, and a lot of it's kind of silly, but it's entertaining. So I don't know. It just kind of reminded me of that. But it's definitely a little different in the real world. I will say that much. But the concept's there.
So what goes on behind the scenes of the farm? What's it like growing up on a farm? You're riding horses.
Yeah. That wasn't something we always grew up with. It was just kind of a little itch we got, and it's kind of.
Oh, the horses, you said.
Yeah. But the farm itself.
It's a big itch, by the way.
Yeah. It's pretty big, but yeah. It's okay. But yeah, you definitely learn responsibility very fast. Faith and I showed cows when we were little, and that was back when we were doing dairy, more or less. But
were you walking them out?
Yeah. That was just a small part of our life. But as an example, that was kind of.
Did you win stuff?
She won.
She won grand champion.
Yeah.
At the Luzerne County Fair.
Once. Anyways.
What are they? I don't know. It's was it the best heifer or something like that? Am I using the right words?
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that word, and I'm always nervous that I'm using it the wrong way.
Oh my gosh. You're fine.
I'm okay.
It's funny.
Best heifer. I'm
Oh yeah. No, but it definitely teaches you to grow up with the responsibility and intentions of Faith and I would feed calves when we were little. And it's it's not just taking out the trash because you have to. It's you're taking care of an animal because it needs you. You are taking care of the animal. You're the reason it's, getting its food every day. And you don't want to be hungry. So it's learning how to respect life in a different manner.
Do you name these animals?
No.
Some of them we do.
Sometimes. But
only the ones we don't eat.
Yeah, the ones that we don't
eat. Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
As I was going to say, that would be really tough for me. I think that's been a day-old conversation where it's if you're going to name an animal, it would be really tough to be all right, Betsy.
But when you grow up with it, it's different,
you grow up with it, and I think something that me and Anna have also learned from farming is, respect for other people, too, because, if somebody, like, especially your elders, because, like, if there's my parents, obviously you have to respect them a lot. But, like, if there's other people, other farmers coming in, like, telling you, like, say we're moving cows, like, sometimes, like, from one pasture to another, it's, like, a long move, so we have other people. So, like, respecting other people's opinions on what that you think they should do and, like,
teamwork. It's a lot of teamwork. Yeah, we do. I mean, the whole farm has only been, for the most part, I mean, here and there we have some, like, we'll have people help us, but it's just been the four of us.
Yeah.
And so family dynamics definitely can, you know, get in the way sometimes, and, you know, we all have different opinions.
Wait, you don't always get along?
No.
What?
you know, but at the end of the day, I mean, we all sit down and eat dinner together, and we...
Sometimes laughter, sometimes yeah, very quiet.
Sometimes
dinner.
It's quiet, yeah. But, you know, we get through it, and it's kind of like, it does help you to develop a different sense of respect, a different sense of, I mean, like, I know, like, what, you know, the meaning of life, like, you know, the sacredness of it, especially when you're taking care of, like, all those animals and, like, the little babies. And, like, I mean, we've had, you know, sick calves. And one time I remember we had one calf that wouldn't get up. It had, like, a lame leg. And, you know, Faith and I would go out in the barn for, you know, a couple hours every day just working on massaging it or, like, getting it to, like, you know, get less swollen until it was finally standing. And, you know what I mean? And, like, those are important things that, like, I feel like people overlook, but it's worth it. Like, at the end, like, when you see, you know, that calf that you were helping or that you, you know, helped when it had bloat when it was little, eventually, you know, have a calf out in your pasture, like, that's beautiful. And so, like, seeing that or helping a birth in the pasture, like, it really makes you appreciate every little thing.
Please tell me what it was like your first time you threw on that big long sleeve and you realized where you were about to go with that sleeve.
Honestly, Dad's got a lot of experience with
that.
They
don't do that.
Oh, they don't do that?
Nah, that's always been Dad's department. I've asked him.
It'll be another episode in the future. But, so about that question.
Yeah.
Tell me what your first time was like. Because that's essentially, you got to do that for, like, the birthing process, right?
Yeah. To be honest with you, like, and it's kind of crazy how much this changes from, like, our commercial dairy to when we're just raising cattle out. I rarely ever help.
Oh, it just naturally takes place?
Mm-hmm. They always do fine. And dairy, I can't even really tell you the reason why exactly, but, you know, we used to help a lot
they
more
get
with calving.
Yeah, they often get sideways.
Yeah, they would have more
stuff, right?
Difficulty with calving. And
look at me,
very,
I know what I'm talking about.
Very rarely do we have to assist one of our beef cows.
Wow.
Having a calf. Yeah. They, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, do you resource out for the studs, or do you have your own?
We have our own bull, and we also do some AI. I used to do AI. I used to work for an AI organization, so I can AI the cows as well.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. The bull, that'll never be eaten, right?
Until or it will gets it be? Mean.
Yeah, they would.
Oh, they will be.
Yeah.
Does that at least get a name?
So,
no. Well, it depends sometimes because, I mean, we did have one, but, and we were, like, planning on keeping him as a bull, and then he got really nasty. So he did have a name, and then it changed, and then he left.
Hannah's not saying what the names were. So,
no.
the names were whatever we called them that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, it pays to be born a female on the farm because they're the ones that stick around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do strictly cow-calf for basically, I think we had five or six that start. We had
that
three,
we
right?
In.
And then we started with three and then we bought
and we
three.
Bought six animals. Yeah.
So total. And
so our herd came from all
to
of those.
What? Like in the
we have about 50 right now.
50 head. So.
Now our bulls typically... Like when you do have one on, are they typically like misbehaving all the time? Like they're
it depends. It depends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know one scared the heck out of me when I was in Florida. It's a funny story, but it was. I remember my brother and I were younger, and my father lived on a property right outside of Orlando in Winter Garden, and there was an electric fence that was around the where the bull was standing. And we went up to it, and I remember I had I had flip-flops on, and I don't know if you've been there, but they have the St. Augustine grass, which is like razor blades when you run through it. But it was, if you're just walking, you're fine. But we were up to the fence, and, you know, of course, there I'm the big brother, and I'm acting like an idiot, and I'm stomping on the ground, and I'm making sounds. Well, so the bull was just sitting there, just, you know, or standing there just eating, and he was probably 20 feet away from me. And I'm laughing and I'm joking with my brother, and I didn't know I was antagonizing him because I was just doing what I was doing. I didn't throw anything at him or act like an idiot, like in that sense, but I was stomping on the ground and I'll never forget the bull just, and my brother, if I told the story, he'd probably pee his pants laughing right now because, you know, he always knew me to be like the bigger brother, tough guy, you know, he wasn't right. So, but I remember I did the stomp and I made the sound, and the bull decided to let me know who was boss, and he just boom drove his hoof into the ground, and then raised up. I saw his like chest puff up, and then he took like two stutter steps towards me, and I ran, and my feet got cut up like crazy. I lost a flip-flop in the pond, and I'm running all the way back to my dad's house, and my brother's like, wait, and and we turned around and the bull's just standing there. But it scared the heck out of me. It was hilarious.
Most of ours are pretty calm.
I feel like we have a story. What's going on? There's some eyes being shot over here about a bull story. Do we have a bull story?
I don't know. What bull story are you telling? This is scaring me.
Now, typically when we would say that, it would sound like an untrue story. That's a bull story. That's a bull.
I'm not sure which one you're referring to.
Wait, there's got to be a bull story here. What is all this?
Oh, I got my ribs broken by one last year.
Why would we sit on that? Like, we were all wondering what we're looking for. You got your ribs broken by a bull.
It was just bad timing.
Yikes. Yikes. What, did it just drive right into you or something like that? Or like
it did.
It did, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
We were trying to move it to load it, and yeah, it kind of went a little crazy.
Oh, man.
But we don't really have any
others
like that.
No.
That's our, yeah.
Well,
it can be a dangerous job dealing with cattle. Yeah.
Well, that's it. I mean, I remember being young and like, you know, you think you're a smart ass. And we did go to, as a kid, we did the whole cow tipping thing, which I'm sorry. I'm admitting it now. It's absolutely terrible. I'm a grown man and I would never do that to an animal today, but I was a kid, like an idiot. And, you know, I'll never forget that. And, yeah. I laughed hysterically because, you know, it was a bunch of us that were football players and we thought we were going to be able to like easily do this cow tipping thing. No. It was like running into a wall.
Right.
And then all you did was basically piss them off around them. And then, you know, we all went running for the fence and it was just an utter disaster. But, you know,
utter disaster.
Unintentional too. It was amazing. That's fantastic. But yeah. Yeah. But during that time, I remember when we did that, the one cow gave a buck and that didn't feel nice. So it was like you get a realization of what you're working with there. I think I would be nervous, anytime you'd ever be behind, like we would go like horseback riding or anything like that. I'm always like, as soon as the back end comes anywhere near me, I'm like, see you later.
I'm pretty sure every farmer has like an intensely high pain tolerance at this point. Everybody's had their fair share.
That's why cowboys are so
sorry.
Tough guys.
And I feel like because me and Anna have been around cattle for a long time, it's almost like you know what like you can kind of like figure out. It's almost like playing a sport. You know what people are going to do after you've played the sport for a long time. Like, you know, like how you're going to play
the
game.
It's a good way of looking at it.
So, like, you know, when a cow is running at you, you have to be like loud and yell and be like, yo, 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 don't run over me. And
that sounded vicious right there.
Yo, yo, but, like, yo.
Yeah.
I don't say that actually.
You're like, yo, 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 yo. Yo, 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 chill. And the cow's like, my bad.
No,
no bad.
No, doesn't go like that. But
okay, all right.
Like, I think once you, like, yeah, once you know what you're doing around cows, it's a lot better than, like, your first time moving cows. You're just, like, standing there, like, gosh. Like,
yeah, it's a big animal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even with, scary. Like, all the animals, like, especially, like, the pigs, too. Like, there's a method to learning about each animal, especially, like, different ones. Like, depending on dairy, I feel like if you're, like, always raised in a barn, they might be a little bit, I mean, they're definitely easier to, like, handle and stuff versus ours that are, like, out on pasture all the time. But, like, pigs that are always in a barn that see, you know, no sunlight, like, we have our pigs that you can just go up and scratch them, like, and they're just, like, loving on you and stuff. But it's a learning process in the sense of, like, and I feel like we do this very intentionally, is learning to read each animal that we have. Like, learning, like, the chickens, like, in the summertime, like, paying attention to, okay, like, all right, this is how hot the day is. This is what the humidity is. Let's, you know, try and move them in the shade or whatever, like, because we know kind of how they react and we pay attention to more of that. But I think that part of the quality of life that we give them is not based solely around just what we feed them, but how we interact with them. I think that's very important. We try to treat all of our animals with the most respect, and with, you know, we try to make everything as smooth as possible, like the least amount of stress as possible, because, I mean, that's what they're meant to do. I mean, like, I don't see why we should treat them with disrespect. So,
do you trust your pigs?
No.
Yeah. Good.
I know very well that I could be their dinner, but I respect my pigs.
I don't trust them because they always squeal.
Oh. That's
Brian hates that. Yeah. He loves it. You guys didn't get to hear that. He played a little sound for us. Well, this is, you know, this has been a lot of fun. Is there anything else that you guys wanted to talk about before we head out of here?
No, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think we really get to know, you know, where you guys came from. Wait a minute, Randy, I didn't ask you about you.
Oh.
Where did you grow up? Like, how did you come into this?
I grew up in the Tunkhannock area, and I have an animal science degree from Delaware Valley.
Okay.
And I met Gary when I got out of school. I worked in the nutrition, dairy nutrition, equine nutrition industry, and that's how I met Gary. But anyways, yeah, so we...
What does a first date look like for you guys? What is that?
It was pretty normal.
Yeah, it was Applebee's. I mean,
we went to Applebee's on our first date.
Okay.
So that was pretty normal.
And then did you just destroy the beef? Like, were you just like... This burger meat.
Like, no, because we were both I was trained conventionally.
We were different people. We were different when we got married.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't even know that girl. But no, I mean, honestly, that's what my job was, to push cows as hard as we can, get as much production out of each animal. You know, I'm tweaking every different ration for every different stage that the cow's in, dry cow rations, milking, you know, like a high group, a low group, you know, all of these different things to try to meet the needs of this cow that just wants to live its life. But, I mean, we're trying to, you know, get the most out of each animal, and they almost become objects, their equipment. They're kind of faceless things. You know what I don't know. There's no attachment to them.
Sure, sure.
It's just strictly business and strictly numbers. And, you know, I'm looking at it as, you know, I'm looking at buying the commodities at the best price. I'm buying, you know, all of these different
then,
things.
Right?
That was then. And still, we still have to buy things at a good price.
Well, but, right. But you
but
now
I mean,
respect.
I was looking at it as, just my job.
Mass production.
And I got accolades if my farmers did very well. Mm. So, yeah, of course, you know, that's what I want to do. And then, yeah, I mean, we did lots of other different things, you know, in between. But, that's where we,
that's
we
interesting.
Started.
Yeah, you came from – now, did you come from a farming and agricultural background?
Not really, no. I mean, my family always had, like, you know, we always had horses. And, you know, my uncles always raised a couple pigs and some cattle. But, I mean, nothing – just for our own use.
Yeah, but it was still relatively close.
And
it's interesting because you always wonder, like, you know, where are the different backgrounds that people come from and how do they come together? And, you know, it's kind of neat to hear that yet you still kind of had a connection. Your brothers and sisters?
I do. Yes, I have. I have a brother, younger brother, and I have a stepbrother and stepsister.
And are any of them in the farming now or?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Yeah, it's not, you know, it's just interesting. What did your parents do when you were growing up?
My mom was a stay-at-home mom. Then she ended up working at a restaurant and some other different, it was like a cable company and customer service.
Okay.
My stepdad worked at P&G.
Okay.
Because that's where everyone, mechanic works.
Yeah. And a lot of those guys did very well, too.
That generation, yeah, they all retired millionaires at 55.
Incredible. Yeah. That's neat. It's neat to hear all about you guys and how this brings us to today. I really enjoyed the story. I'm going to have to make a trip down. I got to go see you guys. There's a couple other farms that were in here. I got to go see you guys. I would like to make my rounds because, you know, I'm so intrigued by being able to go to a local farm and know where the product came from. And, it'll make me feel great knowing that I get to spend this time and chat with you guys and that I'm going to buy products from you, that I know that you care about, you know, the product that I'm getting. You put all this, you know, passion into what you do. So I know it's going to reflect and it feels good and I know I'll get good product. And so, and it'll just be fun to see you again. And I'll love to introduce
Absolutely.
You to my wife.
Definitely.
And, do you guys do like farm tours or anything like that for like youth or anything like that? Is there anything like that happens?
Faith and I do it just because we're proud of our farm. So just ask us and we'll show you whatever you want to see.
Well, that's awesome. So well, then I guess if somebody were interested in coming down and just learning more about farms or even wanted to take a tour or come meet the animals, like
anybody who comes to the market and has any questions, like we'll talk your ear off. We love talking about our farm. We love, we're very proud of what we've become. So, if you have any questions, you can always feel free to message us on any of our social media platforms on Facebook or Instagram, or we have phone numbers out, I think, on those maybe.
Yes.
I think they're mm-hmm. on Facebook and Instagram. But
now you can probably find it on Google, right?
Yeah,
sure.
Or Google. So if you have any questions, we'll be happy to answer them. But anytime during our hours, you can stop by.
And in it's Reinheimer. Is that how is that spelled?
Reinheimer.
Okay. I thought there might be an EIM, but it's
Everybody does, but it's the simplest way you can spell it. So
Reinheimer.
Yep.
I know before we jump off, we talked about doing a cool giveaway. We're going to do a $50 gift card giveaway. It's for the retail store. And so that's, you can buy anything you want, $50 worth. That's really exciting. I'm also interested too. I want to learn more about, I got to write this down or something, because I want to learn more about these packs that you're talking about where you can get all the different meats. I think that's an excellent idea. That's not available everywhere, so that's really cool. Oh, we know what our I know what our keyword is going to be today. I for sure know what our keyword is going to be.
You got to go with it.
Yeah, yep, okay. So here's the thing, guys. This is the way that the giveaway works. If you're a first-time listener, you have to go to the Get to Know the 570 page. Make sure that on our post the day that we release the episode, you have to like, you have to share, and you have to comment a keyword from today's episode. And I've already got the keyword. It is ham loaf.
All right.
That is our keyword, ham loaf. We are going to push this out. We're going to make this product super popular amongst everybody. You guys are going to just be the ham loaf people. That's what we're – but, no, that's really cool. So ham loaf is the key word. $50 giveaway. We do not manage that here on our ends, but what we'll do is a couple weeks after the episode comes out, we'll do a random select. You got to make sure you're doing it on the Getting to Know the 570 page or you won't be included into the random selector. Once we select a winner, we'll put you in touch, and then all you got to do is we'll let these folks here know who the winner is, and then you'll contact somebody there. Who are they going to contact, by the way? Who do you want them to ask for?
Randy.
Ask for Randy, and you're going to connect with Randy, and then you'll be able to make plans to go there and get your $50 gift card or however that works out, $50 credit in the store. And, yeah, I'll be really excited to hear about what that lucky winner ends up picking up. If you're already a customer of Reinheimer Farms and you've had their product, please go in the comment section, share, tell everybody what you think about Reinheimer, what your experience is like going there, what you love to purchase. Tell us about any baked goods. Tell us what your favorite item is. I'd love to hear from you guys. So I guess there's really nothing else, right? Oh, I know you mentioned the social. Just tell everybody, you know, officially where they can find you, phone number, address, social media, everything.
It's just Reinheimer Farms on Facebook or Instagram. We have two phone numbers, but prefer to use just the one for Randy, 570-336-8910. And we are located on 232 Bridge Road in Nescopeck.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for being here. I had a lot of fun. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. I had a lot of fun on this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Leave a comment. Make sure you enter for a chance to win that giveaway. And like, share, comment, subscribe. Do whatever it is you want to do. Just keep tuning in because that's why we keep doing this. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening and supporting the 570.
If you like this episode,
please leave a review and make sure to check out all the past episodes.
If you or someone you know is interested in being a guest,
message us on Facebook or email podcast@conversionworks.com.